Hello and welcome to Mohawks Meet the Team series, a podcast dedicated to the team behind creating the strategy title, Old World. We'll get to know more about the team and their work on the project. This week, we speak to Layla Johnson, the CEO of Mohawk Games, and we learn more about her storied background and so much more, so stay tuned. Hello and welcome to the show, Layla.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I am well. It's a beautiful day here in Alexandria today. We've had two beautiful days after winter storm, so we're lucky.
Yeah, it's been a rather wet winter, hasn't it? It's been a lot of snow.
Yeah, I definitely don't remember last winter being this cold or this rainy. So, and because of the pandemic, it's kind of nice to have good weather so we can take some walks. So it's been good. Have you been able to go and roam around?
Yes. In fact, yesterday was the first time as a family we have walked in some time. So it was nice because yesterday it was almost 70 degrees and it was really good to get out and see the sun and soak up the fresh air.
That's really good. It's good for the soul.
It's very good for the soul.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show. It's awesome to finally have you on, and I welcome the opportunity to get to know you a little bit more. And you know, for the most part, I start the show off by asking about where you grew up. And I have a feeling there's a really cool story with you. So can you tell me about where you grew up?
Yes, I was born and raised in Beirut, Lebanon. I wasn't born in Beirut proper, but I was born in the suburbs of Beirut. And I'm a foreigner, so I'm an immigrant. I came here in the year 2000. The whole family came to the U.S., my father and my brother, my mother. We came to Houston, Texas, and we were looking for a new home, something that's a little bit away from wars and decline of economies and political atmospheres. So it was a very protective move on the behalf of my parents, and I totally relate. I understand them. So yeah, I didn't grow up over here. And I didn't go to school over here. I came here in the year 2000 to go to college. It was very interesting in Houston, Texas. I feel that when I made the decision to come and live in Washington, D.C., that was way closer to the atmosphere I want to live in. D.C. is very cosmopolitan. It has a lot of people coming in and out. It has an ever-changing feel of new people coming in, a lot of exposure to other cultures. So I think Washington, D.C. is home for me. Alexandria, Old Town, definitely home.
Yeah, I think a lot of people consider America like the melting pot of cultures, right? And I feel like D.C. personifies that more than just about anywhere else that I've been to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. I mean, it's kind of, I'm being a little unfair towards Houston, Texas. It's, you know, it is still also a melting pot. It's beautiful, and I have a lot of family over there. I never really felt that I was necessarily culturally suffering, or there was a huge cultural clash. There were moments that were extremely odd, but you can have these moments really anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
So what could you tell me about your childhood? I mean, I don't know anything about Lebanon. I know that it's unfortunately been an area where there's been a lot of conflict. And I can only imagine that was kind of rough to grow up in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can tell you a lot about Lebanon. I mean, I love this little country. The first thing, and just because in the spirit of what I do now for a living, historical games, I'll just tell you a little bit about Lebanon. Lebanon is the land of the Phoenicians, and Lebanon is the land of the Canaanites. So Canaanites is one of the oldest Semitic cultures. And as far as I know, I can trace my direct lineage for 380 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I can trace it like back more, but just directly pertaining to me, there were no marriages outside of the family. So everyone, meaning in the, not family, outside of the nationality, I meant. So as far as I know, on my mom's side and my dad's side, I'm 100% Lebanese.
That is really cool, actually.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. I feel like I am like this warrior, Phoenician, Canaanite warrior. I'm just very, very, very Lebanese. So that is, you know, where Lebanon is. It's a very beautiful country. It's on the coast. Unfortunately, it's been, yes, involved in lots of wars. My childhood, it has a lot of memories living in a shelter. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have food. We didn't have water. And a lot of sounds of missiles falling. We wait for ceasefire to crawl out of the shelter so we can play a little bit. I remember living in a shelter for probably, I mean, a duration of what could be a few months or a year. There was a year in 89 and 90 where we were very little. And I remember how it was like a community. My mom was teaching French and math to other kids, and other people teaching Arabic. And no, I think my mom was teaching Arabic and math, and other people teaching us science. And so they were just dividing chores, but also the children had chores. So my chore was to go wait in line for the bakery to open. And my mom would freak out when we just would go out in the morning to do our chores because there's so much she couldn't control. Yeah, I feel for her. Like when I talk to her today, I wonder what kind of person she was before the war. I do not know, and I don't want to know how it would feel to just like have to like carry your children and run when you are being shelled. It's just, I feel like, especially with my mom, that she's impacted, that, you know, she suffered from PTSD. She still suffers from it. It's very difficult for her to go back to that time and talk about things. When I try to talk to her about certain things, she just blocks it out, blocks the conversation. So, yeah, my childhood, I mean, I can talk about this forever because I have so many different memories, but I want to move on and talk about other things. I'm sure you and I can talk about this for days.
Well, I do want to ask, though, because, I mean, other than the conflicts, right, and that stuff that went along with it, like, what was the biggest transition for you? I mean, you came over to the United States at an older age, right, so that you had a pretty good understanding of how, like, Lebanese culture was and how things were. And then you came over here and you experienced Texas of all places. So, what was that like? What was that transition like for you?
I'll tell you a story that happened with me. So I came over here. So I went to French school all of my life. Lebanon is a Francophone country. And when I came to the United States, I had a very thick French accent. I was sitting in a pub, and that was like probably 2-3 years after we were here. And there was this guy, he said, hey, can I buy you a drink? And I said, yes, of course, you can. And he goes, where are you from? And I said, Lebanon. He goes, where is that? And I said, it's in the Middle East, Beirut. He's like, oh, you're from Beirut? I said, yes. He goes, why aren't you wearing that thing? And I'm like, what is this thing? And he just pointed at his face, like the headscarf. And I said, oh, I'm Christian. He goes, you converted? And I said, no. I mean, some people don't know, and it's fine. He said, no, I'm a Maronite Christian. He looked at me like, what? He had so many questions in that. His face was like a huge question mark. And then he goes, all right, so when is Christmas then?
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah.
Quizzing you.
Yeah. Yeah. And he goes, when is Christmas? And who was born on Christmas? And, you know, do you celebrate Christmas over there? And I just kind of got defensive. And I said, I think that we were celebrating Christmas way before Christopher Columbus was born.
Right.
And I was just, you know, it's like, you know what? That's not okay. Right. But I mean, there were moments like this, but there were also a lot of beautiful moments. Texas is, you know, everything is big in Texas. Everything is, you know, it's amazing in Texas. I have so many stories. I remember driving to university one day, U of H, and just going to check out the classes and seeing just a huge drive. My dad forced me to live with my aunt. I couldn't live in the dorms. So here I am in this like very old beat up car driving, and I see a truck with porn star on the bumper as a bumper sticker. And I was like, oh no, someone is playing a trick on this poor lady. And no, just really, because, you know, Lebanon is a small country. Everyone knows your parents. Like you can never, like, you know, this would be crazy, you know, where I come from. You know, someone playing a trick on you, like they'll find him and talk to his parents. That's not okay. So I'm like, you know, I'm honking. I'm trying to tell her, like, there's something on your car that you need to be aware of. This is just to tell you how naive, right? It doesn't matter how old, you know, I was, you know, in my, I mean, what, 18, 19 when I came here?
Right.
So I really wanted to, you know, just be a good citizen and let her, a good Samaritan. And I kept, you know, honking until she, you know, exited. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to be late for my class, but I'm ready to do this for her. So she got out of the car and I told her, there is this thing on your car. And she just gave me two middle fingers and said a few words to me.
Well, you're amazing. Welcome.
It's like, whoa. I was just so shocked. I mean, honestly, I went back to the car. I didn't understand it. Went back to the, you know, to the youth group that weekend. I told my, you know, like my friend in the youth group what happened. He's like, yeah, I think that she probably was working for the industry. It's like, no, why would she put a sticker on her car? And, you know, eventually, you know, I came to understand things better the more I lived in the United States.
Yeah. So how long did you live in Texas then?
I was in Texas probably a handful of 11 months on and off. As soon as I came here in 2000, my parents went back. I heard that my dad had an open heart surgery. So I dropped my classes and I was like, nope, I'm his only girl. I don't want him to die. Both my grandparents died early and I don't know them. I was very, very afraid for his life. So I left everything. I was also, and I'm going to say this to any immigrant who is listening to me, the first year and second year are really, really hard. And eventually you will find a home. It just takes time. And if I can go back and tell my younger self this, it will really help. And I wanted to go back home, Rob, and I just didn't want to come back here. I didn't see my friends that I grew up with. A lot of things don't sound familiar. I was very aware that I sound different. I just wanted to go back to what's familiar. And it's a very natural and normal instinct. So to those who are listening who are not foreigners, just understand that it's an overwhelming feeling to be living in a whole entity that everything in it is very different. So give some love to your immigrants. They need it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I know that transition can be very tough. I can't even imagine like moving, like say to Lebanon myself. I feel like it'd be a huge culture shock for me. And your father goes back to Lebanon, your family goes back to Lebanon. And
yeah.
Do they? I
live with my aunt
okay.
for a while. Yeah.
And are they still there now?
Yeah, my parents are in Lebanon. My aunt is in Texas. She's always lived there. So I went back to Lebanon. And when I was there, I got registered in school there. I was getting classes in journalism. And I landed a job in a radio station, an internship. I was doing my internship because I was studying journalism. And I was interning for this radio station, Radio One. And the radio host, she got into a fight with a producer. And she walked out on a live program.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He turned to me and he goes, can you go live? I was like, I'll try.
Wow.
And I just, you know, got the air. And he's like, okay, you know, just we'll find someone by the end of the week. If you can handle this, very, very minimum is required of you. Just, you know, just until we find someone. And they were just freaking out for their sponsors. At the end of the week, they came to me. They gave me like just something, peanuts. I would pay them if they and they're like, you have the show. It was incredible. I was very, very young. And it was super overwhelming, but also in a great, beautiful way. The adrenaline was always up. It was a live show. My parents didn't want me to have it. So every single thing is lined up for me to want it even more. My parents do not want me to be, okay, I'm going to get that one. And it's not because I was necessarily a difficult child. I just think that my parents are very protective and I'm very curious. I want to get out there. I want to know more. I want to expose, you know, myself to new adventures, to new ways. I want to learn everything I could learn. And of course, my parents' instinct is, no, we've already lived the war. We need to protect you. We don't want you to open yourself up and be live on the air and you know, become known and people will say things. And yeah. But that was good times.
So what did you do? Like, what were you reporting on?
So Radio One was a drive time channel. So it was transmitting to neighboring countries as well. So it wasn't just a national program. It was a regional one. And that was like an update on music, recent news. Sometimes we'd just bring people to the show and interview them. It was like a talk show. We have callers call in on a variety of subjects that we propose from one day to another. I was on 3 times a week. And eventually that show used to reach the American embassy in Syria. And they decided that that year they wanted to do a series of jazz festivals in Damascus, which was historical, you know, as an event as well. And they asked for my collaboration. And I, you know, was happy to, it was just such a beautiful event. I mean, why not work on a series of jazz, you know, concerts in a historical city? So I would drive up on the weekend to Syria and work with the American embassy over there. That kind of paved some kind of entrance for me into the world of the State Department, which I eventually moved into. And that will be the next chapter of our conversation, I think.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, like, when you came back to the United States, how what was it for you? And now it sounds like you moved into the State Department.
At that point, I didn't really move into the State Department. I was just working with the State Department on their project. Eventually, I came back to the States. I came back to the Washington, D.C. area, and I kept going to school here. So I found jobs that trains and teaches diplomats to supplement me so I could continue my education and hope that one day I'll apply to become a U.S. diplomat, take the Foreign Service test. And slowly, I started moving into education. Like, I started thinking that fundamentally what we're suffering from, not just as the United States nation, just in general around the world, is something that has to do with education. If we can get critical thinking and if we can teach cultural studies early on, and, you know, maybe we'll find we'll have a better world. And I wanted to develop a system with the State Department, eventually an educational program that I could pitch to them to help children in the Middle East cope better after war. I don't want to go into details of, like, you know, when I traveled around the Iraq war, around war-torn countries, it impacted me to see children not knowing what to do with themselves in a new world. And because, you know, I'm a generation of war children, you know, child with, you know, with war in their life, I want to help out that way. So I thought maybe I can develop something that I could pitch eventually to the Department of State and help children in war-torn countries with their education. I mean, there's a specific way I want to do it. I'm not going to go into details now. I got a job with the State Department at the Foreign Service Institute to train diplomats there, teach them languages and sometimes modules. That was in 2016. And that was actually a very good foot through the door for me. And then eventually the story developed for me to kind of move into the game industry by way of chance and by way of desire. But I'll let you ask the questions. I think I'm getting ahead of you a little bit.
Well, I do want to mention that you speak multiple languages, right? Like, you've said that you speak French. You clearly speak English very well. And I know that you speak a few other ones. Which ones?
Yeah. So I speak Lebanese. That's a dialect of Arabic. I speak Arabic, modern standard. That's the written Arabic. And I speak just a few dialects of Arabic, like Egyptian. Syrian is not really very different from Lebanese or Palestinian, Jordanian. They're still like the Levantine dialects. Yes, I speak French. I grew up in a Francophone country. And I speak a little bit Italian. I speak Spanish. I eventually grew to love the Russian language. I have so many Russian friends around me who are always speaking in Russian. And this is very normal because when Lebanese meet, they speak in Lebanese. So that kind of pushed me to learn Russian. I started getting into wanting to learn how to read it and write it. So I got that, and it's nice. I developed a system to teach myself languages, so I got myself through that. I can definitely understand the Latin-based languages much easier because, you know, when you have French and Spanish and Italian in your pocket, it makes things a little bit easier. So sometimes when I hear Portuguese, I could understand it, but I cannot speak it. And that's it. That's it for me.
Wow, that's amazing. I am happy to know like little bits and pieces of other languages and to know English, and you have like a huge list. That's awesome.
I love people. I love to get to know them. Sometimes I just want to, I mean, I grew up, this is both sad and kind of true. I grew up in a culture where, of course, there's war, but there were wars because of religion. You know, the civil war kind of puts a big wall between you and the other, and you create an other, other, and then you create a wall. And then there's so little you get to know. And we were lucky in the 90s to bring down that wall and get to know each other. But I'd like to know more. There's so much more I do not know. So if someone comes to me and say, oh, I grew up in, you know, in the Amazons, I'd have like 1,000 questions I would love to ask. And it's all coming hopefully from a good place. And I'd love to have conversation about politics and history and language. And sometimes it is the people don't have these answers. I mean, if you ask my brother about like the history of Lebanon, a lot of those questions he probably will not know. I've learned to tame down my passion by like 100, just turn it down by 100 notch. But I'm someone who is very curious, and I feel very blessed and humbled that the United States allowed me to feel comfortable being curious and learn the language and ask all the questions and feel at home.
Right. So you mentioned, you know, of course, you were working with the State Department, and then you, I guess somewhere, because I've spoken to Soren, somewhere along the way, you meet Soren, right?
Who's Soren?
Oh, I don't know. So, I mean, he's just some guy, right?
But in 2006, I was out with friends. My birthday is February 14th on Valentine's Day. And my friends, who are super mean, decided that, you know, you need to start really dating. It's not okay to just like kind of get to know someone for a few months and then realize, oh, no, this is not for me. And then, you know, just on Valentine's Day, we have plans and we can just, you know, they were just being funny. So they got me a subscription to Match.com. They wrote my profile. They put my pictures, everything. They clicked, they sent messages to random guys on Match.com for me, from me, without asking me. But the one to Soren I sent. And in fact, I was studying Russian in like 2 o'clock in the morning, I think. And I clicked like, who's online now? And it was Soren. And I'm like, hello. And he responded.
I bet Soren really appreciates that he's a bit of a night owl.
And the next day, I forgot that I gave him my messenger information. So the next day, he's trying to message me from a very different username that from his Match one. And I thought he was Kevin. I thought he was a different person. And at this point, I had already developed a, not relationship, but some type of, you know, like basic, you know, information with quote unquote Kevin.
Right.
So I know what Kevin looks like now. I've, you know, talked to him a couple of times, and I forgot that I had a conversation with Soren. So he tells me the day he's driving to meet me that it's going to take about 2 hours to be there. I was like, why? Like, you live around the corner. And I'm totally thinking that he's a different person. And I said, why? And he goes, because I'm driving from Timonium. And if, I'm not going to ask him, why are you driving from, just whatever. He gave me an answer. So I come back from work and I'm getting ready. And then he's like, I'm here. And that's half an hour earlier. So here's Soren driving from Timonium. He doesn't want to get stuck in traffic. He drives early and he arrives early. And I'm thinking, what is wrong with this guy? He's half an hour earlier to our date. And I'm like, okay, I'll be right down there, just coming. And I walked down out of the building, and here's this tall, blonde, very handsome man standing there where I was expecting a little shorter, dark-haired, round-faced person. I was like, what? What is going on? And I explained to him the confusion. Like, you know, I thought you were a whole different person. And Rob, I can't tell you about that date. My knees were shaking. My hands were shaking. I was so nervous. I fell for him just like within seconds. I don't know if it's just like because I was just surprised and wasn't expecting it, or I had different expectation. But I remember that date as if it was yesterday. We talked about history for 4 or 5 hours. We went to eat sushi. I didn't want the date to end, so I didn't say anything. He didn't want the date to end, so he didn't say anything. The restaurant started cleaning around us, so they were trying to tell us something, like, get out of here.
Closing time, get out.
Yes, get out. So we ended up walking around Ballston. That's in Virginia, next to Arlington. And eventually I just said, okay, well, if you live very, very far, I guess we're going to have to see how it goes. And he goes, no, I'll be here tomorrow. I'm driving down tomorrow. And for 45 days, he drove all the way down to see me. 6 months later, we were married.
That's amazing. That is, yeah. Oh, that's such a cool story. And when he was talking to me, he told me about how you actually end up going back to Lebanon and you introduced him to your family and everything, and then unfortunately got stuck there.
Yeah, that year was 2006. I went back. I took Thorne with me. I wanted to meet my nephew. He was the first baby in the family. I'm in love with my brother. Like, he's such a cool dude. I just love him to death. So it's like, hey, my brother has a baby. And, you know, I'm an auntie. And I'm also bringing my, you know, boyfriend. So, yeah, both my brothers married a Lebanese woman. And I was the one marrying the foreigner in the family. Everyone took it upon themselves to chip in and introduce Thorne to the Lebanese culture, which at many times was, to me, it's hilarious and fun. Like, it takes a lot to embarrass me. I like to laugh. And Thorne has such a good spirit. And I tell you, that was such an entertaining summer. My friends, my family, everyone trying to tell him, no, try this one. This is better. And Soren's getting full and fuller. And every single possible meal that was just, you know, anyone is able to cook was available at some point that summer. It was just really fun. But in 2006, there were some political issues with, you know, with Israel. And Israel ended up invading and bombing the airport. And I got stuck. Thorne just left a week prior. And at that point, I already have connected. I was a United States resident. I had a green card. Thorne and I were not married. I didn't take my citizenship from Thorne. I took it from my parents. So I reached out to the American embassy. They recognized me. I've worked with them before. And they helped me travel to airplane carrier and then to Cyprus and then to the New Jersey, German base, the U.S. German base, and then to New Jersey. And Thorne picked me up from there. It was devastating to see all of this again after a while. You know, you think that was just behind you and you're not going to live through this again. I'm glad Thorne didn't have to witness it. So I hope no one has to witness it, but that's, I think, hoping too much. Maybe one day we'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the year we got married. So I got back. Everything, you know, kind of either one thing went on speed dial. Like I had to move out of my apartment because the lease was, you know, was over, but I wasn't there to do it. So Thorne was there doing it for me. It was a lot to ask of someone that I don't know super well to go through my stuff. And that kind of helped speed up all of the like phases of when you're trying to get to know someone a little better. That just kind of pushes you like into the vulnerability, like you're totally exposed.
Right. Now he knows all your secrets.
He knows everything. I put everything in a journal. I'm just kidding. So yeah, it's, you know, Thorne and I have, you know, lived through a lot together.
Well, then, so you get married that year and then you end up having some kids, right?
Oh yeah. And so the first one is Sebastian, born in 2008. And I love my relationship with him. He's curious. He is kind. You feel he cares a lot about the world. As a mother, I cannot stop myself sometimes imagining what can Sebastian be in the future. Like, you know, I'll always like think, okay, what would this one be? What that one would be? I feel Sebastian would be a civil rights lawyer or something like that. His empathy meter is all the way up. I sometimes have to like talk to him that there are things we can do about the world and things we cannot control. So that's in 2008. Sebastian was born in Berkeley, California. We were there. I followed Soren's career to electronic arts at that point, and Sebastian was born there. The twins were born in Beirut, Lebanon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the twins in 2011. So my parents were living in the United States. They came back after a while, and when my brother wanted to go to college, and they were living in Houston, Texas. And then, I don't know if you remember, but there was the economy collapsed in 2008, I think 2007.
Yep.
My brother and my father were in real estate in Houston, Texas, and they really suffered. So they decided to go back to Lebanon and fall back on my dad's company that my other brother was keeping. And I was like, what? I'm going to be sans family? Like, that's not okay. I just need you to be around. This is insane. I have a baby boy with me, and I fall on the fact that we're close. You know, it's a very warm culture, and I need family. I couldn't deal with the news right away. So I sent an email to a radio station in Lebanon, Energy. And I told them, this is my CV. If you are interested, I'm applying for a job. Because at this point, Soren was also moving to Zynga. Like, he was also going to move again. And I was like, you know what? I can buy myself a few years to finish my education and be around my family. And if we're going to keep moving every few months, I'd rather move somewhere where I have a little bit more control and I can start something and finish it and focus also on my career. Like, also focus on finishing my education. So, and have family around me. So I said to Soren, okay, well, you follow what you need to follow. And I know that, you know, around that time, Soren was trying to make Off-World Trading Company happen, what became Off-World Trading Company. He pitched it to Firaxis, you know, and they didn't want to make it, or I, you know, something along those lines. And then he went to Electronic Arts, and I think that he tried it there, and then Zynga. And eventually he started his own studio, so he could make Off-World Trading Company. But along the way, that meant that I had to pack everything in a box every few and move. I had to quit my school and move. I couldn't have a job for a long time. I couldn't build a career. And I mean, I love Soren, but I also grew up in a culture that limits a woman. And I didn't want to, even by mistake, even so innocently, I don't want that to happen to me. I wanted some control back. When my parents told me they're going back, I'm like, you know what? I'm coming with you. I'll hit so many, you know, birds with one stone. Ouch. I don't want to hit birds with any stone. So I went back. I got back in school. I lined up my life for the next 2 years. This is how I want it to happen. And I turned out to be pregnant with twins. Soren is in the United States, and I'm all the way in Lebanon. I already have a baby, and at some point I had three kids who are 2 years and under, because Catherine and Connor were born in Lebanon and Sebastian turned two while I was pregnant. And I was going to school full time and I had a radio job. Wow. So yeah, that was interesting to say the least. Soren would travel and come see us, and it was always nice when he was around because I could use the extra hands. So I did it, and I was able to finish my degree because I don't know, it was just so important for me to do this. I also got more experience in radio. That was a very interesting radio show for me. It was more of a controversial radio, and I can tell you this, and I don't think that my dad will hear this podcast, so I'm comfortable talking about him behind his back. My dad listened to zero episodes of that show.
Was it just too much for him?
Yeah, it was too much for him. I can't, you know, I am comfortable talking about things that a conservative culture is uncomfortable talking about. And, you know, it's like LGBTQ rights, women rights, the role of religion, domestic violence, politics, things that make people uncomfortable. And I don't talk about them because I want to make people uncomfortable. I just want change to happen, positive one. So it was a very intense show. It was also hard because at the same token, I thought, and I was relatively still also young, I wanted my parents to appreciate what I was doing. But I also understood that they do not want to acknowledge what I was doing because they're traditional. They think that this is just causing problems. This is allowing other people to gossip about me. This is allowing other people to send me hate. And they just didn't want their kid to have that much trouble. It shouldn't be okay for anyone to get to a place where they're comfortable with trouble, where they're comfortable with death threats, where they're comfortable with hate speech.
Yeah, of course.
But someone has to say something. And I can say this for Lebanon, is that it moved in leaps, but it still has some ways to go.
Yeah, I mean, wow, that's a lot of deep stuff. And I mean, how long were you there then after you moved back there?
About 2+ years.
Okay. And then...
Yeah. It got too much.
Yeah. I can understand that.
It got too much. I had to come back.
So you obtain your degree, which is awesome, mm-hmm. right?
And thank you. Yes.
You are like, all right, I need to get back to America.
Yeah.
And was it just timing with Soren too that you guys decided to move back to the DC area?
So Soren wanted to start his company. I wanted to get my master's degree. And I registered in the University of Maryland for education. And Soren wanted to start his own company and have more control and do off-world trading company. And you know how I feel about that game.
I've heard.
I was supportive. The only thing is that he was really far from where we are because I was applying for the State Department. Soren was trying to start his studio near the people he wants to work with so they don't commute, so he would commute. And at that point, being away from family, I definitely needed Soren to be a little bit more on board if I were going back to kind of finish my master's degree. So having the studio all the way up there was difficult, but we kind of managed for a while, for as long as, you know, we could. Eventually, so he started that in 2013. And 2019, we moved the studio. It wasn't a studio, it was a garage up in Timonium. So we moved the studio 30 minutes closer to where we are. I think you know that story little bit.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about like what happened around that time. Would you want me to just jump right into it?
Yeah, I'd be interested to know.
So in November 2018, so I was always involved in Soren's company, but unofficially and indirectly. So when he created Awful Trading Company, which was that project that kept us in a box moving from one place to another, I told him, like, listen, it better be a great game. Like, I moved so many times for this game that it better be a good game. And I think that's why it's like the best game ever. He was afraid. I think I scared him. So he created Awful Trading Company and I fell in love with the game. I was just streaming it. I accidentally created a community for it. And I come back from work and I'm like, I have this like sheet of data where I'm like, Soren, according to this player, I won't say names. This is a great feedback, Soren. I don't like how the patent lab is. Like, this is not okay. Can you please change this? Can you do that? And Soren started getting, you know, feedback. We were on early access in 2015. Back then, early access wasn't a thing. So, and again, I wasn't doing it because I was planning it. It was really all natural. I would just collect the data. And I think this is actually a very good idea, Soren. And he's like, yeah, I'll look at it. I was like, no, please listen. This is really a good idea. So slowly, Soren started changing some design based on feedback from the community. And eventually, it kind of became part of how he did things. And today, we have people from that community working for Mohawk Games. And we are very, very close to our community. It's true that when we are busy, we don't show our face. But, you know, at least we do not say anything, but we are there. And it's been great. And I don't know whether it's like my radio background or it was just always that I care about what others think, or maybe because I love Awful Trading Company and I knew it so well, I knew what they were talking about. So I was able to translate it to Soren. So that was my unofficial presence around Mohawk in general. But I never really was present physically because it was so far away. It was a studio that is like 2 hours north of where I lived. It wasn't feasible to just kind of travel over there. It was not necessary either. And then after that, I would travel with him to pitch for Old World. I traveled with him to Sweden. I met with Starbreeze team. And that's when Starbreeze gave us the deal for Old World. In 2018, Starbreeze declared reconstruction. That's bankruptcy for us. And I'm glad that they're doing much, much better now. But that meant in 2018 that Soren and I need to be traveling again, pitching the game. And I remember that was in like November. I remember traveling to GDC. I remember not sleeping that week from weekend to weekend. I didn't sleep. I was just like sleeping 3 hours. We were talking about Old World in, you know, around GDC and after GDC, around different parties with different investors, with different publishing houses. And we got a connection with the Epic Games Store around then. And then we ended up traveling to North Carolina and meeting with the team, Sergi and Hector and Steven. And the experience for us has been amazing. They're a wonderful publisher or distributor. We have a distributor deal with the Epic Games Store. It allowed us to bring the office closer. It allowed us to actually have an office. It allowed us to hire the people needed to finish the project and create the culture that best fits our beliefs. So I don't know what is the future of Mohawk Games. And as a CEO, I'm going to do everything in my power, everything that I can to drive Mohawk to a better place. All I know is that Epic helped us make this possible. And for that, I am grateful.
You mentioned bringing the office closer. Are you guys in Alexandria proper now, or are you guys near to that area?
We are in Alexandria, yes, Old Town.
Okay, awesome. So you guys actually run out of Alexandria now.
Yeah, we are now. In, you're talking about where we were able to bring the office to. No, we brought it near the Baltimore airport. So it is in Linthicum Heights. The office is over. By the time we were able to get the office and start working from the office, a few months later, COVID happened and we went remote.
Yeah, that was a
lot of work. But at least, you know, we were getting, you know, going in the right direction. It was, you know, somewhere where we could meet and working from a garage means that no one has a door. There was no privacy. If, you know, there was at any time you want to talk about something, everyone else can hear it. Also, it means for people who need to work without noise, that wasn't feasible.
Yeah.
You know, whether you want it or not, any conversation, you are privy to it. And sometimes, and, you know, I've worked in many places where there are some conversations I do not want to be part of and I don't want to hear.
Right.
So we wanted to move to a place where it gives... It's healthier in every way, because as soon as you have options, you have, you know, it's a little bit healthier, you know, having doors is healthier.
Yeah, I can understand that. And so Layla, I'm curious to know, like, as the CEO of Mohawk Games, what's your day-to-day look like?
I usually do not say that, you know, I'm the CEO, like I deal with the business side of things. And I prefer the part of me that is more involved in Old World. So Old World, I'm going to tell you about Old World a little bit, is a historical, it's a PC historical game. It's a strategy game. I am the project lead and I am the art director for 2D art. I'm also the head writer. So there are different things that I do for Old World directly. Project lead, it means that I am part of like the different disciplines that create Old World. I deal with the artists and the programming team and the design team. And if anyone needs anything, they come to me and, you know, I just see how it fits for the project and whether we're going to be able to afford it, if we need to hire for the project, where the project is going, is design, narrative design married to mechanics, is, you know, art married to design, and just generally make sure that the project is going in the right direction. I'm very close to, for example, Amanda. She's my assistant producer. We hired Amanda. I realized I needed help because trust me, I did. I don't ask for help that often. And one of the things I learned in leadership is the ability to ask for help when it's needed and how much better it is. Because we hired Amanda in July. What is it? We are February now. And since Amanda came on board, I can't tell you how much she took off my plate because I was doing all of what Amanda was doing. On top of that, I was doing other things. So it was just really difficult. And I'm glad I have Amanda today. She's an amazing addition to the team. I'm glad we have the whole team. I mean, we have a beautiful team. But she took so much off my plate so I can focus on other things that I'm doing. Head writer means that, so I volunteered to write eventually for Old World when we were trying to recruit writers, but we weren't getting lucky because, as I understood it later, the event editor is a little bit overwhelming. It's its own beast. So I started volunteering to write until we found a writer. And in that way, because I was one of the early ones, I was able to set the tone of how we are going to approach narrative design. So eventually, I was able, when we got money and ability and time, I was able to hire more writers to join us to write for Old World. And now we have about 2,500 events. Wow. In the game, which is great for playability. I mean, replayability. You want to play a different game, you know, every time. And that helps you get a new story, a new scenario, a new event, not the same ones that you can start predict after a while. And in terms of art direction, that's a whole world that opened up to me that I am so blessed to be exposed to. And for that, I thank Mark Shahan from the bottom of my heart and Jason Pastrana on the team for teaching me words to express what I see in my head to the artists who draw the paintings. So I do like the historical research, and then I need to talk to the artist about how I want the colors to be and the mood to be and where I want the character to be. And they equipped me with that language, and never condescendingly. And they didn't treat me like an outsider who doesn't know. In fact, they allowed me to describe things to them, and they taught me that there's nothing wrong with the way you're expressing yourself. You know, most artists talk the way you do. I'm not an artist, but most people who are talking about art direction, I can draw a stick figure. Like, I'm not joking. I said I can draw a stick figure and put something on top of their head to look like a crown. I'm terrible. But they equipped me with the language to communicate enough that today, when you look at the art we have, you'll see that that's the product of a beautiful team working together to help me explain to the artist what I'm trying to achieve.
Layla, you mentioned your team, and it's something that I've noticed after speaking with a lot of your team is that, first of all, that they're all very talented, and that, two, that they're also very diverse. And I'm curious to know if that was a conscious decision on your behalf to hire a diverse group that, you know, that really took into account not only their talent, but also, you know, what they like, the different life experiences that they could bring to the table.
So when I joined Mohawk, the team was all white and all men. It was difficult, to say the least. So in order to do that, once we were able to have a deal, it also happened gradually. I started taking up power or responsibility slowly but quickly. And I realized that we needed to change culture and fast. In order to do that, we needed doors first. And then with the money, we needed new hires. So I started hiring women and people of diverse, you know, ethnic backgrounds. And people who didn't like that were welcome to leave. And eventually that opened up space and room and positions for people of different diverse backgrounds. It took a lot of pain, and I'm very happy to have paid that price to create the culture we have today. We are very happy to wake up and go to work, quote unquote, go to work. People are safe. I feel comfortable talking about my children. I feel comfortable talking about me as a human, me as a woman with my team. I feel comfortable being vulnerable. I feel comfortable saying, look, I feel overworked. I'm going to clock out. I placed a code of conduct that really requires, it's not like a genius thing. It just really requires minimum amount of respect for each other, that all of their ideas are valid. And I genuinely care for them. And I think they feel it. I think they know it. And they care for each other. They're very respectful. They enjoy each other's stories. They know each other's kids, even though they've never met. We know each other's pets. And it's a little hard for me because, yes, I do not want my team to crunch. No crunching. But I need to remind myself often that I need help. Like, for example, right now, I think I need someone to come and be like some kind of assistant, because we're heading towards publishing. We're heading towards prototyping for the next project. So I am definitely going to need help. I need someone for community managing. And I am reworking a lot of things. Like I'm reworking the website now, I'm working on the music, we're finalizing the scores. There's so much, like I'm translating old Arabic and sending them to the composer we're dealing to, the composers we're dealing with, so they can turn them into music. I'm very close to the group of composers and working on the scores. It's just, you know, it's getting a whole lot and I need a whole lot more help. And I will find that help. The key is to make sure that they fit the culture and that we remain a healthy culture for anyone to come and work with us.
I have to say that culture shines through, right? And every interaction I've had with all of your team and, you know, not only through this podcast and through the Discord and just in general in public, it just seems like they're really comfortable and that they really enjoy where they work. And that passion from that enjoyment comes through in just about everything they do. So whatever it is you're doing, it seems like it's really working for you guys.
I'm very happy to hear that, Rob. I know that you've already recorded so many episodes with members of the team, and I'm very happy that this is the sentiment. I don't take it lightly and I don't take it for granted. And I hope I as a leader, I continue, you know, doing everything I can to create or maintain that place for them, because they're wonderful. They're amazing. They're talented. They're passionate. I don't know if I can say that and it comes out right, but they're all nerds in all the right way. We put something online about like, I wish I can open. I know Discord is a beautiful community, such a beautiful place to be. I mean, you are part of that community as well. But if I wish I could open up Slack conversation for others to see how we talk internally. We are like geeks, but geeks with hopefully geeks with a sense of humor, because right. Like we talk about things and then we dig up some stories and then we add to the narrative and then we add layers of complexity. And there's so much love. There's so much love for the project. You know, that would be interesting if we do blank, 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 says employee. And then someone else, you know, adds to that. But how about we add that because his brother was plotting against him. And it's just like, they don't mind the work. It doesn't intimidate them. It doesn't scare them. It doesn't, no one says, you know, if the other person can do it, why do I do it? There's no attitude like this. And again, we are not a crunching culture. So I am starting to think, and I'm relatively new to the industry, that if you create that positivity for your team, a whole lot more gets done. And I'm seeing this with my team. We have weekly updates. We send, you know, the build, it gets updated weekly.
Yeah. So that's definitely unique to the industry. And I want to say something, and this is not just because you're on the show and because I feel it like, you know, that's something you want to hear even, but I truly believe, and this is someone who's had a lot of experience and has researched leadership in a lot of ways, because I've always really admired good leaders, that a culture like that starts from the top down. And I believe, honestly, in my heart of hearts, that you have created that because of your positivity. I mean, just hearing you speak about your people, it's never, you know, there's never a negative word that comes out of your mouth. It's always just how great they are and how talented they are. And you know, when you speak about people that way and you boost them up in that way, that positive way, it really does a lot for their desire to work and their desire to work for you. And, you know, I just have to say that, you know, you're clearly probably a much bigger part of that than you would even ever admit to. But, you know, it is there and it's pretty obvious.
Well, all I can say is I love my job. I love where I work. It makes me more creative. It allows me to think of a future. I'm already thinking of one. You know, we're already going to start prototyping the next one. And it allows me to have a vision. And it allows me to have a vision with them. And on the long run, I start thinking, if this happened, then we can do this for the team. If this happened, I can bring more to the Mohawk team. If this happens, I can do this. And I don't see a world without them. It's already thinking ahead. When contractors finish their contracts, It hurts me. Like, you know, I send them emails saying I'm going to do the best I can to connect you and with people who have a job for you. So I know you're in a, you know, because they are talented and I want them to work somewhere. They want them to find a job. That's, you know, I get very, very close to them. And I can say I'm going to take your compliment and shut up. Thank you, Rob. it's just turning in circles here.
No, it's just another example of what I was just saying. So I just out of curiosity, and I know that there's only so much you can tell me, but what does the road look like for the rest of 2021? I mean, I understand, and for sure you guys are looking to exit early access later this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, how does that look for you? I mean, what's the main focus now? And then what do you kind of look for when it's time to push it out the door?
You've asked me in the right time where I'm wondering whether I should say more or just not say anything. So I'll say this, and I'm comfortable with this information here, that yes, we're going to be fully publishing Old World in 2021 and somewhere around summer, fall of 2021. We have not lost a beat so far, and I don't see how we will, because, you know, there aren't huge decisions we're going to be making for Old World. And we're comfortable because we have three different projects, or if I may, 2.5. There's a possibility for a collaborative work and two other projects, one medium-sized project and one as big as Old World. And it started with me going through Soren's design ideas and taking stuff that we already have and trying to polish stuff and talking in the background. Like, you know, the dynamic at the house with Soren is very interesting too. Like, I'd be cooking and he'd be sitting in the background. Now he actually is learning how to cook, and he's doing a great job. This is a whole episode for a different time. I was teaching Soren cooking, and I thought that, you know, the meals he's making today are so complex that if you told me pre-pandemic Soren will be doing these, I'll just roll on the floor laughing. I'd be like, sure. I'm so, I don't want to say proud of him because I feel like I'm condescending. I don't know. I'm just so happy someone else is cooking. That's all. But in the kitchen, we'd be like talking about design and new ideas. It would be interesting if we do this. It would be interesting if we were able to create that game. And that's always happening, always, always, always happening. So one day I took stuff from his book and I wrote it down. And I said, what if we do these? And they were both good. I mean, they're both his ideas. And he's such a beautiful designer. He's such a really, really good designer. I know I am married to him, but I'm also a fan of his. And it's not because we work together, and it's not because this is, you know, I'm not doing a publicity thing. This is really true. I'm in awe of how his brain works. Till today, and I'm talking about probably 8 months of conversation, we are not being able to divorce an idea or put it to sleep so we can develop the next one. As of now, we have 2.5 things coming up. I have no idea what's going to happen. I am having talks in the background with publishers and people who are interested right this week, last week, and the week to come, and the week after that. It's all going to be talks, and we're going to have to choose whether on our own we are able to publish or do a, you know, crowdfunding, or we need a full publisher, or we'll know a whole lot more in the next few months. And I'll definitely keep you updated, Rob.
Wow. the little kid in me is, you know, jumping up in excitement right now. It's so exciting to hear that, because I'm with you. I share that. Let's just say this. I think that Soren is incredibly smart, incredibly brilliant, and his designs are, you know, of another league, right? And so anything he's behind, I'm behind. So anything that you guys have coming is great to hear. So, well, Layla, it's been incredibly good. No, never mind. It's been amazing to get to hear your story and to get to know you better. And I'm sure that other people are going to hear this and think the same thing. And maybe they'd want to come find you online. So where can they find you?
So I'm definitely a Twitter person. I like tweeting about about Old World, about sometimes about what's happening in the world in general. I like to tweet about my kids. I like to tweet about my pet, Oliver. And my team. So come find me on Twitter. I'll drop my info in the description or the bio below. You can also find me lurking in the public Discord. If you tag me, I'll definitely respond. I'm also behind the Instagram. I like to show off my team's art. So I'll be posting about the the art of old world and talking about the art and where it's inspired from. So you can find me there. All the information I'll be able to supply you with. But if you want to come say hi, I'll always appreciate it. I like to hear from anyone about their thoughts, about the game, about anything. So please let me know if you want to drag me into a conversation. You can find me on Twitter. I sometimes can find myself around forums. If you want to invite me to your forums, let me know. To your Discords, let me know. I'm accessible. So come say hi.
I will take you up on that. So excellent. Thank you again so much, Layla. It was great. And until the next time, take care.
Thank you, Rob. طاغن بالفريه وديك بيندا ومشو فو بالفريه.